Hi everyone, Sam here, your mother of Valkyries and host of the Sword and the Ribbon podcast. This week, Valkyrie Val joins me on the podcast. Val, they, them, is a classically trained engineer and a self-taught artist whose focus in life is mostly their cats, their husband, and reading. And in true ADH fashion, they currently are working on many different projects and commissions, from sculpturing to jewelry making to paintings to granny square cardigans and crop tops. Val is an important person in the Valkyrie Squad community and has given so much other time to it. Not only are they our head librarian, aka Discord moderator, but they helped plan this year's exclusive meetup. Hi, Val.
Hey, Sam.
Thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, welcome. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. Like, what would your dust jacket say about you?
My dust jacket would likely say that I do a little bit of everything. Doing singing, writing, reading, art, engineering, creating, a little bit of everything. But mostly I'm here for my cats and my husband and making sure that I find things that are beautiful in each day.
I love that. Yeah, definitely here for the cats.
Yep, absolutely.
We're here to make them happy. That's all that matters. I know every time you like pop into the Discord, it's like some new project, some new hobby or activity, and it's so fun to like watch and see all the little things.
Yeah, there's been a lot of different things. I'm just glad that I've been able to stick with about half of them and not just have a pile of unused craft supplies like most people tend to have.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that. But speaking of books, can you tell everyone how many books you read last year?
Well, last year I read 603 books.
Hey.
Yeah. I don't necessarily recommend that to anybody. It's not necessarily the most healthiest thing to do, but my God, was it fun.
I remember your like countdown of like, I want to get to this many, like hit just like to say you've done it. I understand that piece.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm going to let you know a secret. Only one book last year was not a romance book. It was called A Valkyrie's Guide to Badassery. You might recognize it.
Oh, wait. I think I've heard of that book. I think I know the author.
Yeah, I think I do too. It was fun. I liked it.
I forget about that book, to be honest, some of the time. I forget, like, oh yeah, I should like talk about this thing I did. But yeah, I remember it was also part of our first book for the book club, the Valkyrie book club.
Yes, it was. And I was actually, after I read that, we were like, oh, we're going to do a book club. This is a great idea. Let's just do that book first because I just read it. I know what's going on in it. I can talk to people about it. It's great.
Exactly. Yeah, that was it was a good segue. So before we get into all about your story, I have a couple of fun questions for you.
Shoot.
What are your favorite and least favorite book tropes?
Well, I'm definitely a sucker for enemies to lovers, like hands down. And I've been reading a lot of Fated Mates, mostly because that tends to be with like supernatural and fantasy stories lately, for romance at least. But I absolutely despise the miscommunication trope. Like, there are very specific instances where it's okay, but like 9 times out of 10, it's just because somebody won't talk to their partner. And it drives me insane. I'm like, please just communicate. Just talk to them. It'll be fine. You can't make up their emotions and like reasonings for them. Just ask.
I agree. It's definitely one of the most like frustrating ones to read. You're like, if you just open your mouth, not for his penis, but for communication.
I mean, maybe both, but it'll be fine.
You can talk and then, you know, it can work that way.
Yeah. Communication is sexy. It's fine.
Yeah, it is. But what is your favorite genre to read?
My favorite genre is like fantasy. Like I primarily only read like gay or trans books, like especially romance books in general. So reading fantasy and supernatural romance tends to have a better world for those people in it. And I would like to escape what is happening outside my window right now. But I will read some contemporary, but it's very specific authors that I will read contemporary with. Otherwise it gets to be too much reality in my books. That's not why I'm reading my books.
I feel that. I don't dip my toes into the contemporary realm a whole lot. We get it already. Let's go someplace else. But I don't know if other people know this, but you and your husband dance What is your favorite dance to dance?
Why are you asking me the hard question?
Because everyone does it to me and I have to do it back.
So we do dance. We've been dancing for 7 years now. But and our favorite dances are typically like Argentine tango, or, you know, hustle or whisk a swing. Or we just did a fancy new thing in Foxtrot this week. It was fantastic.
I have like very base level knowledge of dance.
Argentine tango is a sexy tango.
I mean, I'll be honest, because everything is related to movies in my head. But I know that's the one in Tango, Roxanne, and Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
And that's, I like that one. Okay. And the reason why we're all here, how did you find Sarah J. Maas and her books?
Okay. So I got pulled into SJM because my best friend from like middle school was like, hey, you need to read these books. I think you're going to love these books. And I took one look at them and I'm like, they are too thick. There are too many of them. I'm not doing that. She's like, but you're going to love them. And I was like, no, I'm not reading that. There's too much. And I just kept putting it off. And it turned into one of those things that everybody kept recommending them to me. And so too many people were recommending them to me and I didn't want to read it anymore. And then I was driving a lot while I was working because I had to go to job sites. Job sites were between a half hour and 3 hours away. And so I needed something on those ridiculous drives. And Audible had the first ACOTAR book on sale. And so I got it and I read it. And then I read the next one. And then I read the next one. And then I finished them. And then I started Throne of Glass. I will say that I have not finished the last book of Throne of Glass, and everybody gets mad at me about it. I probably won't finish it because it is stressful.
Fair.
It is stressful, and I don't want that much stress. Like, there can be stress in my books, but it needs to be over in less than 2 hours, and that's not going to happen with that book. So maybe I'll get to it. Maybe I won't. We'll see. Don't get mad at me.
I've actually seen a couple of people on Instagram lately say like, okay, I'm finally starting Kingdom of Ash. I'm like, okay, you're not alone. There's a lot of people have like put it off.
Yeah, that book is very difficult.
It's a big one.
And then I'm only like through one and a half of this Crescent City books. And it's getting to that same point where I'm like, everything is just constant go, 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 go. There's no downtime for like to bring your adrenaline back down while you're reading. This is hard, and they're thick.
Yes, I understand. It's kind of like, I like thriller and kind of horror stuff too, but I do most of my reading at night, and those are too stimulating at night that I'm like, we'll just do the audio, because I listen to that in the daytime, and then we'll just read fantasy in the evening times. Because yes, thrillers are thrillers for a reason.
Yeah.
Okay. And because I ask all of our guests, would you recommend Valkyrie Squad?
Absolutely. It's a very welcoming and inclusive to all levels of fitness and abilities. And it's one of my favorite programs that I've ever worked in. And to the point where I made a little like, hey, come like visit Valkyrie Squad cards that I hand out because I get asked about it all the time.
I have to say for our listeners that Val gets asked about Valkyrie Squad way more than I do in person, and I think it's absolutely hilarious, and it's probably like, the
so
best thing
bizarre.
For me.
Like, when we went to the first meetup, it like everybody recognized you, and that was expected, but everybody recognized me and was like, come running, and I'm like, I don't know who you are. You just were like, Val, I'm here, and I was like, hi? What's happening?
You're so active in the community, and
yeah.
That's like, you've made like a name for yourself, and that's, I think that's what is so an additional like welcoming piece to the community. You share like your outfits, your photo shoots and stuff like that. So people actually recognize you. And that's really fun.
Yeah, it is fun actually getting to meet a lot of those people and talk to them. Like we've coordinated two different like Seattle meetups, which is bizarre because I'm in Portland area and I've gone to 2 Seattle ones and 0 Portland ones.
That's how it always works.
Yeah, like the people are great. And the fitness is fun. Like, you get to play with swords.
What more could you ask for? Ever wonder what the Valkyries eat when training in the summer court? Tarquin gave us his cook's recipe book. Discover the delights of seasonal cuisine with the Summer Court Seasonal Cookbook by ACOTAR Eats. Embrace the nutritious and cost-effective benefits of eating with nature's calendar. With almost 30 new recipes for every occasion and ACOTAR-themed, This will be your go-to guide for the summer. Every recipe is swap-friendly for vegetarian and other dietary concerns. Check out the ACOTAR Eats Instagram page at ACOTAR Eats to purchase and for more information. So, as we start to read further into your story, I know before joining Valkyrie Squad, you were part of other fitness groups. What made you decide to make the switch to Valkyrie Squad?
So I kind of had reached the end of how useful those other groups were to me. I had just finished reading A Court of Silver Flames when I found Valkyrie Squad in the first place, because people were sending it to me in the first couple months, the month before it was released and then the month it was released. And then I ended up joining the month after that. And I wanted a program that would help me start from the bottom, because I had just gone through a lot of health setbacks and I didn't know where to start anymore. And of course, the sword fighting, I was like, heck yes, let's be Nesta. We've got this. We can do it. It's going to suck, but it'll be fantastic.
You're going to suffer, but you're going to be happy about it.
Yeah, it's going to be sore. You're going to have thongs. You know how to get through this, though. And bad days, just take your bad days. They're going to be bad, and that's fine.
Yes. So how is Valkyrie Squad different from those other groups?
Primarily those other groups, they didn't actually have someone in lead that would put together a program. Like, they were just group fitness groups. Like, one of them was a Reddit-based group. And so it was just this big group, and it had coaches, and it had people who were bodybuilders who did shows. There was a whole ton of different kinds of people in there. There was people at the base level of fitness. There was people with no levels of fitness that were trying to get into fitness. And it was just all over the place, which meant you got wildly different recommendations if you asked a question.
It sounds really overwhelming.
Very overwhelming. There were thousands of people. And the group itself was very useful for certain things, but it was also thousands of people with different opinions. It was very difficult. They weren't really run by people who had certifications. They weren't run by people who built up programs. Some of them were, but usually those weren't the ones in control of the groups. So having a group that knows how your body actually works, how a body works, knows how to make modifications for bodies, is a huge difference.
Yeah.
There was another fitness group that I'm technically still a part of because I run the Facebook group. And it is actually a subgroup of a podcast that was very popular that has since imploded. But that was when we were first starting to realize how toxic positivity has infected the fitness world. I went in with a couple other people and we're like, okay, these are the rules now, guys. You're allowed to rest. Don't hurt yourself. All of these other things. It's not no pain, no gain. That is wrong. Please do not.
Oh, yeah.
Just because somebody else can do it doesn't mean your body can. You're okay. But having something that already has a lot of those ideals built in, that's a game changer.
Yes, I think, to toot my own horn here, but I think when you come from an athletic training background like I do, where you deal with athletes who have injuries, there's such an emphasis on recovery. And I think that's just very important, and it's very much forgotten in the training fitness realm. And you only see that, not only, you see it more when you are working with athletes who tend to injure themselves and the importance of rest. But that's a whole other topic. So on that subject of toxic positivity, you shared with me an experience like that, dealing with that within the fitness community. But can you define what that is and share a little bit more about it? What specifically toxic positivity is?
Toxic positivity is when you are disregarding any negative emotions and forcing yourself to be positive. You're not letting yourself experience your negative emotions. You are always, everything has to be great. If they can do it, I can do it. No. Think positive. Or no such thing as bad days. Failure is not an option. Things like that are very, they don't allow you to experience your full range of emotions, which is a very important thing to do for your mental health. And it usually brings up a lot of anger and shame when you try and stick with this forced positivity.
It makes it bad to feel angry or sad.
Yeah. And in the fitness world specifically, a lot of the phrase no excuses, sometimes they're not excuses, they're reasons, and they're valid. Like, you could make excuses. That is still a thing, but that's not... Life is messy and complicated, and you need to be able to accept that.
Yes, and I was actually just having this conversation with someone yesterday of, like, finding the balance in between the two.
Yeah.
Of there's going to be things that come up, like, work got completely out of hand and you couldn't make your workout. Or there's, I got COVID and I can't move my body.
Yeah.
Like, that's a reason.
When I got COVID, I couldn't breathe. Like, there was no working out happening. I could not breathe.
No, you don't want to force yourself to go into that. I remember teaching in, like, the studio, people were like, well, I'm kind of sick. And I heard that if I still move my body, it'll help flush it out. I'm like, okay, but maybe going for a walk around the block will help you, not coming in here with everybody around you and trying to give 90% and you can only give 15%.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I think people are going to need to realize is that in learning your boundaries, you're going to get things wrong. And that's okay, because that means you can learn from getting it wrong. Like, oh, I felt like this and I pushed myself too hard. And knowing where that line is going to make a huge difference, because then you actually have the knowledge to know what you can and can't do with your body. Having a chronic illness definitely makes that more complicated, because my line of do not go more than this on any day is like a roller coaster. So it's really hard for me to figure out where that line is, because it always is moving. Chronic illness sucks. And adding fitness into it can actually make your life a lot better, but also makes things difficult.
So Val, you've talked about toxic positivity and chronic illness and that line. What advice would you give to people to find that line for themselves?
What I've always been told by doctors and other people who have chronic illnesses is that when you're looking to see how far you go until you feel like you've done 80% of your energy level for whatever activity it is, because then you still have some buffer room because you're going to move around. So if you're running or if you are doing a workout and you feel like you're just getting to the point where you're going to collapse, you've gone way too far. But if you're getting to the point where you feel like you can probably still function tomorrow, then that's about where you want to aim. Obviously, that gets really difficult because the weather changes and then I can't function tomorrow. And I don't always know when that's going to happen because I don't check the weather schedule every single day. Or like all of the smoke moves in and I can't breathe anymore. And then I do too much when the air is problematic, and then it's the next day is terrible. It's find where you think that you can still function, because you're gonna take some time to recover, and as long as you're not pushing it and you're not constantly going above that, you're gonna be okay. But it's gonna change every day.
Yeah, and I from like what you're saying, like kind of having that flexibility within yourself.
Yeah, giving yourself permission to do less is just as important as giving yourself permission to do more.
Yes. Small set. So recently you celebrated leaving your job. How did you recognize you were experiencing burnout, and how did you come to the decision to leave?
I thought that I was just depressed, and I was trying to figure out what was making me depressed. But then I started noticing that I was dreading going to work. I was having panic attacks when I got emails about certain jobs. I have always been a high performer, and I was very intentionally doing the bare minimum to get through it. And I just didn't want to be there anymore. I didn't want to interact with some of the people at work at all.
And I've always had very high stress jobs. If I make a bad decision in an emergency situation, things could explode, kind of high stress. So adding the stress with all of that and realizing that I may have some depression, but it's not depression causing everything else. It's the burnout causing the depression. And every time I would take time off, I would feel like I need a vacation from my vacation. Like, I would have the vacation and then I'd come back to work and I'd be like, oh, this is weird. Okay. Like, getting back into it was always more work than it should have been. And I had some long talks with my husband about it. And we had some big, like, financial reduction stuff to make sure that we could live on just his salary for a little while. And then I quit and things suddenly were better. Like, there's still, not gonna lie, there's still been a lot of hard things happening since I quit. And it's been very complicated. I've had a lot of stuff with my health still because being in burnout and a high-stress job has made my health kind of awful. So I have been to a lot of doctors in the last couple of months that I actually have time to go to and don't have to take time off work to do, which is a miracle. But I also am still dealing with the baked-in consumerism. I'm not contributing to the household, and I feel guilty and shame about not being able to contribute monetarily anymore. And trying to work through that has been one of the hardest things I have ever done. But, like, looking back at it, I've probably been in some form of burnout for the last 10 years, at least.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah. No, and I know you and I have had, like, talking about your own work of just, like, how it's affected a lot of things. Yeah, it's a long time coming, and it seems to be helping you a lot now that you've taken one massive stressor off of your shoulders. And what are some ways you've been successful in coping with recovering from burnout?
Well, I've talked to my therapist a lot. That has happened. I have been doing, like, a little bit of commission work now that I actually have time to work on commission work. So I have been making, like, granny square cardigans with crochet and some crop tops. Like, people come to me, I'll take vintage blankets and I'll rip them apart for the squares and then I'll reassemble them into whatever they're asking for. Sometimes I'll, like, actually make them from scratch, but that takes substantially longer. And I like the instant gratification of already having the squares done.
I hear the squares is the longest part of the process.
They are. Absolutely. They are. I also like being able to, like, reuse things in general. So, like, a majority of the things I create are all created from vintage or broken stuff. I like being able to take old things and make them new again. But I've been making jewelry. I'm actually taking a jewelry smithing class right now that I just started. I'm very excited. We've only done one class so far, but it's a blast already.
Are you the reason why I've been getting more jewelry making stuff
Probably.
On my TikTok feed? Okay.
Which is wild because I actually don't get jewelry making stuff on my TikTok feed. I get it on Facebook.
That's all I've been getting lately. I'm not mad about it, but I've just seen like metal smithing from scratch. And I'm like, I could not figure it out why I was getting this fed all of a sudden. Now I realize it's probably you.
They're fun. I like those videos.
No, they're gorgeous. And that's such a beautiful creative outlet. And it seems to be helping with your... Now you have time for that because you didn't seem to have time before.
No, I absolutely had no time before because I would get done with work and I'd already be exhausted. Not even going in, like, even just sitting at home from a work from home day and going through and doing all the work. By the time I'm done, I just want to curl up and do nothing and read. And I actually have time to do chores. I have time to paint something or just take care of the cats and play with the cats. The cats are way happier right now.
You have so much more time for yourself, and that's so, so important. So I know you write poetry. Is that one of the ways you also cope with burnout?
I actually haven't written any poetry during burnout at all. I feel like a lot of the poetry I wrote was, like, stress related. That's not to say that I don't constantly have, like, little lines that pop into my head and then I throw them in the notes app on my phone and then I look at them and go, I should do something with that. And then I get distracted by something else because now there's a lot of distractions. So, like, it's still there and it still happens. I just haven't, like, completed it.
Yeah, you just cycle through the projects and it'll come back around.
Yeah, it'll come back around. Like, I'm going through, like, different phases. I'll go through the crochet phase, maybe, like, do some cross-stitching again, go through the jewelry, come back around, do some writing.
Keeps things fresh and new.
Otherwise, it just gets too boring.
No, I get it. Like, it's just try all the things. I understand. Some things will stick, some things won't. So, on the topic of poetry, you shared with me, I don't know, like, last year or something, this poem. Would you mind reading it for us?
Sure, I will read it. It's called Bitch. It says, our armor is distance. Our armor is indifference. You call us a bitch like it's an insult. But we've wrapped ourselves in bitch. You can't hurt us with the words we embody. We're tired of people cutting us down for fun. We put our armor on so we can survive the world. We put our armor on so that the world has to survive us.
What inspired you to write that?
Nesta.
I figured that was the answer, but...
Yeah, so it was based on Nesta, but it was actually based on a conversation that you and I had.
Oh, I did not
remember
that.
Remember when I sent you that bracelet?
Yes, I was having a real rough year.
Yeah, so... When it was around that time where I found that TikTok that was talking about how people who badmouth Nesta don't realize that they are badmouthing their friends that identify with Nesta, and how it's very hard to go through and try and protect yourself and find out that people absolutely hate that aspect of you protecting yourself. And as a part of all of that, this poem ended up coming out. And I think it was also because I had recently been called a bitch. Well, like when I wrote it, because I mean, both of us obviously identify with Nesta. And I know people look at me and they're like, oh, but you're so nice. You're like really, really kind and you're so friendly. And I'm like, yeah, because I have to be and also know when to be. But I've learned how to protect myself, and that is by being a bitch. And it's very important to know when to do either.
Or you just have, like me, sisters who just watch me and go, sister, be nice. We don't always have them around to, like, take it off, put it away.
It's like, it's all right. You are okay right now. It'll be fine.
To anyone who does meet me, I'm actually very nice. I just appear very, very angry.
You have a very, very nice resting bitch face.
Anyways, so our final question. You've dedicated so much time to the Valkyrie Squad community. Why is Valkyrie Squad so important to you?
Valkyrie Squad is the first place where I have been able to be 100% me. I joined Valkyrie Squad after I came out as non-binary, I believe. After I had changed my name. So nobody, if Valkyrie Squad knows my dead name, which is just like a relief on its own. I can be who I am, do what everybody else is doing, and be included. And that's not to say that like the previous groups that I've been a part of would have necessarily been a problem with every single aspect of me, from being disabled to being trans to being an engineer to being an artist. Like, they would have accepted it, but there's always that like level of trying to get people to change their thoughts about who I am so that their brain matches who I am in real life. And I didn't have to do that in Valkyrie Squad. It was already a community that I could be a part of. It was welcoming from day one. Like, it was inclusive from day one. And while Discord in October of, was it 2022, was tiny, and now there's like over 2,000 people in there, it was still that having the small group and even the big group, I can just be. And that was really important, especially in a fitness group where when you do things, like certain movements, if you just start crying... You can be vulnerable in the group because of what has ever happened in your life and you're experiencing it through the workout. And people just are like, yeah, me too. Like, it's really important to have that community that is encouraging without making you feel bad about what you're not able to do. And I got recruited and then started putting in a lot of work because I wanted to make sure that we kept that, because that was so important when I started.
And you've done such an amazing job keeping that integrity alive in the community.
We work on the bots a lot, and especially putting like quotes in for the random quote generator that Cassian has. If you're on Discord, if you use the exclamation motivation tag, it'll give you a random quote. But we make sure and go through all those quotes to say, like, this isn't something that's going to try and force you into doing too much. Like, this is here to encourage you. This is here to tell you it's okay to take a rest day. Like, that's fine. Like, this is here to tell you that you can't control everything, but you can control how you react to things. We try and make sure that things are not toxic positivity, and also try to keep things out of the pessimism realm.
Exactly. Well, to wrap this all up, this week's piece of Cauldron Blessed Wisdom is from Val. So take it away.
Well, everything doesn't have to be perfect all the time. Like, life is messy, and it always will be. But it's how you work with that mess that's going to make the difference. So from your mood to your workout, you're allowed to have off days and not punish yourself for them. Progress, no matter how small that step is forward, is more important than making things absolutely perfect. And make sure you give yourself permission to rest. Maybe rest prevents us from giving up. Your action item this week is a mindset shift to help you stay in the middle ground instead of going from one extreme to the other. So you woke up feeling like shit and saying, I woke up with a migraine, so today is gonna suck, is not actually helpful. But neither is telling yourself, today is gonna be amazing,
when you feel like shit.
So instead of trying to force yourself from pessimism to toxic positivity, tell yourself, I'm open to the possibility. So things like, I feel like shit, but I'm open to the possibility that coffee will make me feel just a little bit better. Or, I feel like shit, I'm in pain, but maybe I can find something to laugh about today. Giving yourself that grace and kindness without shutting down your entire day. So just let yourself have something nice, even on the days that hurt the most, whether that's physically or mentally.
That was wisdom worthy of the cereal. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Val.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This was fantastic. And to all you listeners, until next time, remember to be strong, kick ass, and be fucking magical every day. This episode was produced by writer Bex Castro and audio engineer Carolyn McMorrin. And special thanks to Valkyrie Val for coming on the podcast. You can keep up with the projects that they are working on by following them on Instagram at @UndercoverSiren. Special thank you to Taylor Ash for creating the music of this podcast. And thanks for listening to The Sword and the Ribbon by The Micro Squad. If you're interested in learning more about The Valkyrie Squad, visit us at thevalkyriesquad.com. If you're interested in learning more about The Micro Squad or Geek Gym for a class, visit us at themicrosquad.com. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts from so you don't miss out. And if you like this week's episode, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.